Radio Network's special live coverage of Governor Rick Snyder's 7th State of the State Address. I'm Rick Pluta, Lansing Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network.
And I'm Zoe Clark with Michigan Radio. Tonight, we'll hear Governor Snyder's address, the Democratic response to the speech, and of course, analysis of the evening. And before the governor takes the podium, Rick, let's take a moment and put this address into context. You know, last year's speech, we cannot forget we were deep in the middle of a crisis, clearly on everyone's minds. The governor used that speech last year to address the city, the crisis, and his plans to fix it.
Delivered an emotional apology. He spent half of the entire speech on Flint, and it's now a year later. Flint remains a big problem, but we're not going to see the same kind of attention to the city's water crisis in this speech in all likelihood, because we know the governor also has other priorities that he would like to call attention to. Workforce development, infrastructure, changes in the auto industry.
And normally, Rick, this is a time where we would talk about some of those initiatives. What normally happens is the governor's administration, a couple hours before these State of the State addresses, meets with reporters and hosts like us and says, hey, let's give you a few things, a little bite.
Explain the speech, the context.
What's going to happen in the speech. But Rick, that did not happen this year. You spoke with the governor's communications director and he just said, we're not doing it this year.
Right, for the first time in a long time that they said that they're going to forego the briefing, the explanations and the background on the things that are going to be in the speech. And I think what that says is that it was more important for them this year to keep everything close to the vest and start the sales job after the speech.
Chief Sergeant at Arms, David Dixon.
That's Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly.
The Governor of the State of Michigan, the Honorable Rick Snyder, the First Lady, and the First Family await entrance for the Joint Convention.
Will the Special Committee please escort the Governor to the rostrum?
So Governor Snyder is now entering the House chamber to the applause of the legislature. He's being escorted by a special committee made up of senators and representatives who go and bring him in because it's a privilege to be brought onto the floor of the House like this. So we see the governor walking down the aisle. He's wearing a dark suit, white shirt, and a red tie picked by First Lady Sue Snyder. She chooses his ties every year for this speech. A lot of handshaking along the way, a few hugs delivered. And this is actually, as we said, this is the governor's 7th State of the State address, the second to last one, and the first one to the last legislature, Zoe, that he will be working with.
And it's interesting to note that since this governor took office as chief executive of the state, he has delivered this speech in front of a friendly audience. Of course,
right.
What I mean by that, not everyone is going to agree with the opinions, but for the past 6 years and for the next two, this governor has had a majority of fellow Republicans in both the House and the Senate.
Right. He's always had that luxury, although they have not always been in lockstep. And we will see, for example, what the governor might have to say tonight about taxes, that the Speaker of the House, Tom Leonard, has said that cutting the income tax is a high priority for Republicans in the legislature. But even though there's a budget surplus awaiting, it's not that big. And the governor's budget director has cautioned that we should be careful how quickly we commit that money.
The governor is continuing to hug now his family members. He just hugged his wife, Sue, as he makes his way up to the podium. Standing ovation now. Brian Kelly, Lieutenant Governor, standing there, waking his way up again as the governor makes his way to deliver his 7th State of the State address as governor of Michigan.
And we should point out that he's getting a standing ovation right now from both sides of the aisle. We'll see how that plays out during the speech.
We're hearing hollers and yelping.
Well, this
from
is
the
a
floor.
Moment, especially for Republicans, to celebrate the beginning of their year.
And there are a lot of new lawmakers, too. This is their first...
There's 44 new members of the State House. And,
thank you. Thank you so much.
And now Governor Rick Snyder delivers his annual State of the State address.
So please take your seats. It's a very exciting evening, and thank you for the honor to join you and share with our citizens of our state. Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, Speaker Tom Leonard, Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekoff, Senate Minority Leader Jim Ananick. I think you're over this way, Jim, right? House Minority Leader Sam Singh, members of the Supreme Court, members of the Court of Appeals, Secretary of State Ruth Johnson, Attorney General Bill Schuette, members of Congress. We have a number of members of Congress with us tonight. Consul Generals of Canada and Israel, my cabinet, ladies and gentlemen of the legislature, fellow public servants and citizens of Michigan, and my family. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you tonight. It's an exciting evening. First of all, I want to start, though, by thanking the outgoing legislators. We had so many great public servants that served in this body, both the House and the Senate, in terms of good service, and I want to say thank you for that outstanding service. I also want to welcome the new members, so many new House members and one new Senate member. Welcome to this august group, and I look forward to having a great partnership with you. I want a special welcome to the military members that we have here today. In fact, I have a special recognition that I'd like to talk about two groups in particular, and then I'd ask you for a huge round of applause for them. We have wonderful things going on, both with the Air National Guard and the Army National Guard. To begin with, from the Michigan National Guard, Air National Guard, from the 127th Wing, which, is those of you that aren't familiar, is at Selfridge, and flies the A-10 attack aircraft and the KC-135 tankers. They had special honors this year. They represent the best of Michigan. This year, in fact, they won the Carl A. Spates Award, denoting the top National Guard flying unit in the entire nation. Right up there. In September, they also won a Meritorious Unit Service Award for performance in the support of combat operations. They were deployed, and they won a second award. Representing them, we have Lieutenant Paige Campbell and Senior Master Sergeant Eric Bates in the gallery tonight, so we're honored to have them with us. Now, we also have the Army National Guard to be proud of. And we also have two representatives from the Army National Guard, and what they did was something special. They competed against 41 teams from around the world in a 96-hour competition and did 21 day and night events during those 96 hours. And they competed against the best in the world, special forces from the United States and other parts of the world. And these two individuals won the 2016 International Sniper Competition. So let me recognize them, and I'll ask for your applause. We have Sergeant Nicholas Mitchell and Sergeant SICOM Keo Polycom. And one thing in particular, with these two fine individuals, let the deer of Michigan beware when they're out hunting. The next thing I'd like to do, though, I view as important. I'd also ask for a moment of silence as we recognize the deceased military, law enforcement, and first responders that we've lost in the last year. Thank you. Now, let me talk about some successes in the state of Michigan. We should be really proud. We had an incredible year. It's remarkable what you can accomplish when we work together. When we put progress over partisanship, compromise over conflict, When we listen not to the loudest voices in the room, but the smartest. When we live relentless positive action. That's how we measure achievable progress. That's how you achieve measurable results. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Michigan. We listened, we learned, we achieved. And we should be proud of a number of the great accomplishments over the last year. We've made Michigan a place that if you work hard and play by the rules, you can truly get ahead. Not just survive, but thrive. Let me give you some illustrations. On the job front, in the last few years, since 2010, we've created almost 500,000 jobs, making us number one in the Great Lakes region and number six in the nation for private sector job growth. Real jobs, fulfilling careers. Imagine the difference every job makes. Every day since 2010, on average, 220 Michiganders woke up with a new career opportunity. Waking up with a purpose and possibilities, with the opportunity to get ahead, not fall behind. We're at the lowest unemployment in 15 years, 10 points below our high of June 2009. And it's a broad-based comeback. I wanted to make sure different parts of Michigan were participating. Over the last 6 years, we've had 38 counties cut their unemployment rate by more than half with a steady or increasing labor force. These counties include Alpena County, Charlevoix, Lake, Luce, and Muskegon. In fact, we had 16 counties with an unemployment rate below 4%. We have two at 3%. We're lowering the cost to live in Michigan while increasing the opportunities to serve. It shows up in terms of a growing personal income rate, and we should be really proud of that because Michigan's hardworking taxpayers deserve it. Per capita personal income has been growing faster than the national average. How do we rank? For the last 6 years, we ranked number one in the Great Lakes region again. We ranked number seven nationally, and during the first three quarters of 2016, we rank third in the nation. This means people have more resources to spend, be better off in their lives, and save for a better tomorrow they deserve. On home values and ownership, since 2010, our housing values have gone up 44%, beating the national average, and we're building new houses now. Building permits are at the highest since 2006 and trending upward. With respect to population, we've had 5 years population growth in a row. Do you remember what it was like when we heard about our kids having to leave the state? Actually, raise your hand if you know of someone that had to leave Michigan because there wasn't a job opportunity in the last decade or so. Those days have changed, folks. They no longer have to leave Michigan. We're creating opportunities. And to give you a fact, you might be amazed by, but we should be really proud. Our state has the highest net-bound inward migration of people with bachelor's degree of any state in the Great Lakes region. We're winning the national and international competition for quality minds, for career opportunities, and quality people, and we're going to keep it up. Business in Michigan is growing with exciting expansions and new investors. We're growing a more diverse, vibrant, and healthier economy. One area I want to cover in particular is agriculture, one of our big industries. Food and ag account for over $100 billion impact on the state of Michigan. We had nearly $3 billion in exports just this last year. We're number one in the production of 20 different commodities. In fact, I want to highlight one, the dairy industry. To give you some idea, our production's up 44% over the last decade. Now, here's a stat for you. As you travel Michigan, I want you to look for those Michigan cows. Michigan cows are the second most productive in the nation after Colorado per cow. So when you see those cows, give them a shout out. We want Colorado to move on over. So, Sometimes there's a chance when you got the mic, you got to go for it. One company in particular I'd like to highlight is Continental Dairy in Coopersville. And we have Steve Cooper from Continental Dairy with us. They've invested over $50 million in recent years to expand butter production and processing. In addition, a new product, Fairlife, is being processed next door. It's great, and we have an opportunity to look forward to more growth from Michigan's dairy cooperative. Steve, thank you for joining us tonight. We have a new company to our state in another commodity area, in the pork area, Clemens Food Group, and we have Ernie Miley with us, and they're doing incredible things. They're going to be located in Coldwater. They're going to open in fall of this year. They're creating 800 new jobs, and they're going to process over 10,000 hogs a day. So let's give Ernie and his operation a shout-out for choosing Michigan. Now, I have a personal favorite for a number of you. We happen to be fifth in breweries, microbreweries, and brew pubs, and that has now made us number four in hop production, and we've got a great barley opportunity. So agriculture is doing well in Michigan. Tourism. Thanks to Pure Michigan, we're showing America just how beautiful we know our home state is. I'm a huge fan of kayaking, rock hunting. I even tried elk bugling this last year. One of my favorite experiences was biking the brewery and wine trail in the Thumb. It was absolutely beautiful. We have so many awesome things to do in our state, and we should be proud. One of the great things was what Lonely Planet did for us. They named the UP one of the top 10 value destinations for 2017, and it was in a category, the only place in the United States, along with Venice, Morocco, Belize, and Nepal. The UP is right up there with the best in the world. To give you more perspective, though, Michigan had the highest growth in incoming international visitors of any state in the nation from 2014 to 2015. The secret is getting out. I couldn't be happier about it. Manufacturing. We're simply leading the nation. We've created over 116,000 manufacturing jobs since December 2010. We lead the nation. We are number one, both in terms of number of manufacturing jobs and growth rate percentage. Look at just the beginning of this year. Since the beginning of this year, we've had awesome announcements from Ford, from GM, from FCA, talking about more and better jobs coming to Michigan. You hear they're not going to Mexico, but they could choose any state in the nation, and they are choosing us because we have a climate for success. More and better jobs. A Michigan for our kids. We've had some great successes, and we've done incredible things, but that's not good enough. We cannot be satisfied with just positive progress, not when there are more careers waiting out there to be created for our people. Let's not be nostalgic about the past. We need a strong foundation for our future. It's up to us to create more and better jobs and build an even better Michigan for our kids. How do we do that? I'm going to start with good government. I know many of you may even think that's an oxymoron, good and government going together. But in Michigan, we prove it works. We were a broken state before 2010. We were ranked 49th, 50th, in a few cases, even 53rd. Our mission was simple. Make the government serve its hardworking taxpayers the right way, with truly efficient, effective, and above all, accountable government. If we didn't, we'd keep on passing the buck. It's time we did the future that our kids deserve and we deserve. We started with the budget. If you remember the old days, two of the 3 years prior to coming to office, we had budget shutdowns. For the last 6 years, we've gone six for six, getting structurally balanced budgets done 3 months ahead of schedule, setting a benchmark for the nation for the best budget practices, and we should be proud of that, and we need to keep that up. In terms of a rainy day fund, again, in 2010 when I took office, we had $2 million. Wouldn't run state government for 30 minutes. During the course of 2017, we'll reach over $700 million in our rainy day fund. Now, local government's a key issue, too, and we should be proud there. In fact, I want to give a shout-out to Detroit. It's great to have Mayor Duggan with us. Stand up. We've gone from bankruptcy to the comeback city of the United States. Just recently, the New York Times says Detroit is ninth on the list of places to go in 2017, beating out places like Athens, Madrid, and even the Great Barrier Reef. It's incredible. And I want to give a shout-out to the legislators for great work on Detroit schools this year. We addressed the legacy financial debt. Local control has been restored with a new board. There's still much tough work to be done. And I encourage the new board to be laser-focused on the kids' learning with an emphasis on prudent financial management while we go through that process. And I want to give a shout-out to Senator Hansen and Representatives Garcia and Representatives Kelly. Thank you for your work on that legislation. We have more opportunity in Detroit, though, and that's where I appreciate a partnership with the mayor and the Detroit Promise. It's a wonderful program that we've launched to really give college opportunity to kids in Detroit. We started with a two-year program. This year, we opened it up to four-year opportunities. We're going to have over 1,000 students participating this year, with 268 having an opportunity to go to a university now. But we can't take this for granted. In fact, I'm calling on our philanthropic and business community to join in and help the mayor and I support the promise and continue this path to give awesome opportunities to these great young people from Detroit. But we have problems at the local government level, and we must be honest about them. We must recognize them and we must address them. We have too much legacy liability in a number of our communities. The problem, we have 334 local units that provide retiree health care and pension that have $14 billion in unfunded liabilities, a huge burden. These are local challenges that demand local input outside of the Lansing bubble. But this is why I want to form a collaborative work group with my legislative partners, local government, and local employees to ensure the financial stability that will lead to the effective delivery of local services and look to protect their benefits as best possible during this time frame. As a state, we cannot get ahead if too many of our local communities have problems. So I look forward to that effort over the next year. Now, to continue this, in addition to good government, we need strong communities. And good communities lead to good states. I want to share some of the outstanding things we have going. Healthy Michigan. We have 640,000 Michiganders in this program. It's provided over 2.8 million primary care visits, over 400,000 preventive care visits, and it's saving us money. From 2013 to 2015, the costs of uncompensated care decreased by almost 44% on average in our hospitals, a savings of hundreds of millions of dollars. Healthy Kids Dental has been a huge success. Back in 2010, we had 400,000 kids covered in certain locations in Michigan, thanks to 6 years of dedicated work with you, my legislative partners. We now will be covering every corner of Michigan and over a million kids. We should be really proud of that. With respect to Healthy Michigan in particular, though, when it comes to the federal government, we hope for the best, but we can't count on it. There's going to be changes in health care. The important thing is we need to let them know that Healthy Michigan is a model that can work for the rest of the country, that we should be speaking up, and I look forward to working with my federal partners to talk about the value of this program, how it may even be enhanced as we go through these difficult and challenging questions. And we look forward to a reimagining health care for all Michiganders in our entire country, with Michigan being a leader in that dialogue. And I appreciate your support in that effort. On the public health side, I created the Public Health Advisory Commission to help ensure Michigan is best in class in public health, both at the local and state level. And they'll be coming to me with recommendations in April, and I believe a number of legislative recommendations. So I look forward to working with you there. A problem area we have is opioid abuse. Since 2009, we've seen a doubling of heroin overdoses. That's unacceptable. We need to do better. I do want to thank the legislature. You did outstanding work in passing Good Samaritan legislation that encourages people to seek help for themselves or others without fear of prosecution. We're making an investment in Michigan's automated prescription system, which will make a big difference in terms of preventing drug diversion, whether it be prescribers, pharmacies, or at the patient level. And MSP has launched an angel program at their Gaylord Post. Literally, people can now come to the Gaylord Post and ask for help. And MSP, the Michigan State Police, will actually help them get treatment. That's the kind of outreach we should have. We're going to expand that program, and I also would want to recognize legislators. We had a great task force working this. In particular, I want to give a shout-out to Senator Tanya Shoemaker and to Representative Andy Shore for their work. So thank you. Our environment. We need to focus on being cleaner, safer, healthier, more sustainable. It's one of our greatest assets, are the wonderful environment we live in with the Great Lakes and all the wonderful things we have. One of the big accomplishments this last year was energy legislation. Some of us even pulled an all-nighter on that one. But it was worth it because it's going to achieve three outcomes. It's going to help protect our environment, it's going to help us meet our energy needs, and it's going to save Michiganders money. And I want to give a shout-out to several people, Senators Knopfs and Pros, and Representatives Affendulis and Verhulen, and to former Representative Nesbitt. Thank you for your great work. On wetlands, they're vital to our wildlife and infrastructure. We've lost an estimated 4 million acres of wetlands over the last few decades. We're going to do something unique this year. The DNR is going to create a public-private partnership on state land to work with local landowners to say we can use state lands as a mitigation bank to help encourage development at the same time protecting our environment. I look forward to working with the legislature on how to do that effectively and to do something that will be unique to the nation that will encourage more smart development while we protect our environment. Invasive carp, one of the greatest threats to our state. We need to do more. We've invested resources, but we need to catalyze all the Great Lakes states on doing more and our nation. And one of the ways we're going to do this is I'm excited about we're creating an international crowdsourcing challenge to invite the brightest minds in our country to come together with innovative ideas about how to address this challenge. We're going to be launching this challenge early in the year. If you want to start getting information, you can go to mi.gov/carp challenge to start getting more information. But we're going to put those minds together and be creative. On the topic of environmental justice, I'm going to announce a works group to go study the issue of environmental justice to make sure all Michiganders have a clean, safe, healthy environment no matter who they are or where they live. And I look forward to that work product. For our seniors, the greatest generation and beyond. In 2014 and 15, we worked with the Silver Key Coalition. The legislators and us all worked together to get rid of a waiting list that we had for in-home services, whether it be meals or other services. We provided the resources to eliminate that waiting list. We were so successful, though, and we got word out, we had more people sign up. So we have a waiting list again. Let's make that waiting list go away again. In terms of our veterans, we need to support them. They've sacrificed for us. We need to support them when they've come back home. We're doing some great things with veteran employer programs, but we can do better. To give you an idea, we started 2 years ago. We had a commitment from veteran-friendly employers to hire 600 people. This last year, we did over 2,700 people. But I'm making a call for all Michigan employers. We have dozens of companies now. We should have hundreds and thousands. So if you're an employer in Michigan, let's get you signed up for that program and let's change that number from 2,700 to thousands and thousands. So I'm asking for your support on that. One of the challenges we had this year were our veterans' homes at the state level. We know there are huge challenges at the federal level. While Marquette Home got good rankings and ratings from the federal VA, we had issues, audit issues, and other real issues in Grand Rapids. Since then, we've worked hard to correct those problems. We've seen tremendous progress. A December audit report shows we've made great progress. In addition to that work, though, it really catalyzed a bipartisan work group to recommend new major steps for our veterans' homes, including Medicaid certification, new facilities, and a new governance model that will be the best in nation. And I want to recognize Senators Hildebrand and O'Brien and Representative Barrett for their great work putting that together. So thank you for your partnership. And I wanted to save this, but now I'd ask that all our military and veterans stand, and let's give them a round of applause for their current service going forward. Safe neighborhoods and campuses. No one should have to walk our streets in fear. Not now, not ever, and we have more work to be done. In communities with our Secure Cities Partnership, we've seen double-digit decreases in violent crime. The program's working, and we're going to expand it to more cities. Another key issue, though, that is a huge national issue, is we need to improve community and police relations. And I want to support the Michigan State Police for wonderful work that they've done already. They're going to do more. The Department of Civil Rights has done some great work. They're going to continue, and we're going to put a real emphasis through the Michigan Commission on Law Enforcement Standards to really emphasize community policing, community relations. And we're going to do more in the areas of training, recruitment, and dialogue. And that's an important area we should be working on. And a really exciting thing going on in Michigan is the vocational village at Ionia, our state prison there. Most inmates will reenter our communities after they've served their due time. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Isn't it better if we help them have a job as they exit, rather than creating an environment where they may end up creating more crime? We're doing that now. They're actually providing outstanding technical and vocational skills. Things like trucking programs, construction, manufacturing, auto repair. In Ionia today, the program's really working. We're seeing people get job offers as they walk out the door before. We're going to expand that program to Jackson this next year and the Women's Huron Valley Correctional Facility. So let's grow this program and help our returning citizens have better opportunities. Sexual assault on campus. We need to do everything we can to keep our college and university campuses safe. Michigan has become a national leader on this, and I'm proud of what the First Lady Sue Snyder has done and her legislative partners. They've been a great team for their leadership on this issue, and I'd love to give them a shout out for their leadership on this topic. They've held a second summit now. They had over 500 people in attendance from all across the state of Michigan, and we're doing grants to multiple colleges, 18 colleges and universities, with $500,000 in grants to do better on this topic. We need to keep that up. Now at this point, what I'd like to do is actually ask all our public safety and first responders to stand so we can recognize you and your great service to our state. You're a first responder or public safety person. Now I'd like to talk about Flint for a couple minutes. Make no mistake, this was a sad chapter in the history of our state. Last year, the people of Flint suffered an unacceptable crisis. I made a commitment to the people of Flint to fix it. We took immediate action, and in the following days and months, we've worked tirelessly to make Flint's water safe to drink again and improve the entire city of Flint. We're making progress, but our work is not done yet. I want to thank Mayor Weaver, who's here tonight, the City Council, and the White House for their partnership. We all owe the people of Flint a solution, and we've worked hard to deliver that, and we're going to continue to be committed to that. And I want to thank all of you in the House for your support. Where's the mayor? Mayor, you should stand up. Thank you. In terms of progress, though, on the waterfront, we have new test results, and by June of 2016, this last year, we provided $27 million to help with lead pipe replacements to the city of Flint. To date, we've seen progress. Over 600 pipes have been replaced, and we look forward to working with the city on accelerating the progress of that. We're working hard on that topic. In terms of health, we have over 24,000 new Flint residents on Medicaid waivers to help provide health care. On education, we have over 400 new positions for early childhood education in the community of Flint, and we've seen 827 new jobs created in that community since we started this process, and again, we're going to keep up activity in each one of those categories. That ties right into infrastructure. We know this is a huge challenge, not just in Flint, but we saw what happened in Fraser with the sinkhole. We're at risk in every corner of Michigan for aging infrastructure, and we cannot take this for granted. Michigan residents deserve safe, reliable, sustainable infrastructure. That's why I created the 21st Century Infrastructure Commission last year. The commission did tremendous work. They looked for best practices not just in our country, but around the world. They concluded that we need to invest more. We need to literally invest billions of dollars of new investment over the next several decades. We need to look at all public and private sources for this, including fees, taxes, grants, bonds. We need to start now working on this issue, and we need to stay committed to it. Now, I've talked about a huge investment, but we can be smarter about how we invest. So one of the things I want to work with the legislature on creating a pilot and working hard on is something they found is integrated asset management. Now, that's a really fancy word, but it's really simple. Think now of the road in front of your house or your business. How often have you seen that road get torn up to do road work? And then it gets repaired and it gets torn up to do gas work or electric work or fiber being laid. And how many times does it get torn up when we could tear it up once and do that work all at once to a tremendous savings? That's the kind of smart things we can lead in Michigan, and we would be a national leader in that. On water quality, we need to improve. We learned that from the Flint situation. And I'm excited to be proposing a stricter standard than the federal government for the lead and copper rule. We need a better rule. That was part of the problem. It needs to have lower acceptable levels, it needs to have better testing protocols, it needs to have better notification, and it needs to have better public input. So I look forward to working with the legislature on that. In terms of infrastructure, though, thank you. One area we really need to work at the national level. Our top priority in terms of ask of the federal government should be the Sioux Locks. We need a second 1,000-foot lock. It was actually authorized by Congress back in 1986, and the money was never appropriated. Our entire economy in this country is at risk with having only one lock. Homeland Security has said that themselves. The U.S. Department of Treasury actually came out with a recent study showing it could be a huge economic boom to have a second lock. And we need to make that a priority, and I will, in terms of discussions with the President and Congress. And I appreciate your support. Education. We need to give our kids the education that gives them the skills and judgment they need to achieve quality careers, to start families, and to give back to their communities. So I created the Education Commission this last year to take up those issues, and I'm looking forward to their recommendations. But we have made some key accomplishments this last year. One thing in particular I'm excited about was the work on pre-3 reading, about enhancing the investment in those young people, because you learn to read through third grade. After third grade, you read to learn. And we need to do more, and we're going to get up to being the best in the nation by working these standards, and I appreciate that partnership. Now, all of you know I'm a proud nerd, but this is one where I actually had a good idea brought to me, and I'll tell you who it came from in a moment. We need to do better with computer science, computer education, and cybersecurity in our schools. K-12, there's no time to wait. Actually, there's a recent study that said 71% of the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math jobs of the future will need to have more knowledge about computer coding, computer science, and such. 71%. Think about your schools in your area and think about what they're teaching. We have a huge gap. We need to close that gap. And so I look forward to creating a work group to work with the legislature, the superintendent, on coming up with great ideas about how to encourage more of this. And you're going to find us willing to make investments. It's that important. Now, the wonderful part about this story is our young people see this. So I had a case this year where I was actually thought I was just doing a photo opportunity. They didn't even give me a staff person with me. And it was to take a picture with four wonderful women from East Lansing High School. They had achieved something. They started a group called Students for Females in STEM. They walked in my office. I thought I was taking a picture, and they gave me two-minute elevator pitches from each of the four about how we had to get our act together in the state of Michigan on this issue, and they were right, and they're with us tonight. So if you could stand up, and we could recognize you. As I said earlier, it's about listening to people and understand where they're coming from. And it's important to learn that we can learn from some high school students. We don't have all the answers, and this is a great case where they brought the issue up. We listened, we learned, and we're going to make Michigan better because of it. Now, the next thing we need to do is make sure not only do we give education, but we don't treat education and the economy and careers as silos. We need to help people become career connected. To really look at the whole issue, not why they're just in school, but lifelong learning. That's the opportunities we face. That's the world we're looking at. We're going to continue to see huge changes in the economy. Whole careers and opportunities may disappear while new ones are being created. And we need to have the flexibility to respond to that, not in a vacuum, but in a leadership position. So one of the things I'm excited about is what we've been doing with apprenticeships. We are clearly one of the leading states in the nation with apprenticeships. In fact, this last year we had a 14% increase in registered apprentices, and we have more than 13,000 already. But that number needs to grow dramatically, and I know I have partners in this legislature to talk about how to grow more apprenticeships in this state, and I know I have great partners from the private sector that believe in that too. A great program we did this last year we should be really proud of was called C-STEP. It was about providing capital equipment to our community colleges to upgrade their career tech education programs. So if you're an auto technician looking to do auto repair, you didn't go on 10-year-old equipment. You're using the same equipment you're going to walk on the job and use. If you're doing machining, the same thing. It was an outstanding investment that we helped 18 community colleges. I went around and toured a number of these community colleges. The results are outstanding. Places like Bay College are doing emergency medical technicians. One of the most exciting programs I heard of was at Washtenaw Community College at the auto show. They're literally doing mobility technicians to understand how to do LIDAR, vision systems, all these new systems that are going to be going on vehicles. It's cutting edge. That's the kind of attitude we need to bring to career connectedness. And we're going to invest more in programs like this. I want to see more done to help K-12 do that same kind of investment. Building the 21st century economy. I've created a commission to help work towards that. Our economy is changing rapidly, and the jobs of today won't be the jobs of tomorrow necessarily, as I said earlier. We each have a role. This is not something government simply fix. We all have to be at the table. At the government level, what are we doing? Over the last few years, we dumped the dumbest tax in America. We cut needless regulations. We started paying down our long-term debt. We started saving for the future. We laid the groundwork for success we have today so our businesses could create jobs. We create the environment for job creation. We don't create those jobs. At the employer level, we have some of the greatest companies in the world here in Michigan doing wonderful, innovative things. Two illustrations. A small company, Second Chance Wood in Durand. What they're doing is they're taking reclaimed lumber from old trees, from barns, from demolition sites, and making new furniture out of it. They've created 60 jobs. In fact, when they looked where to set up, they could have gone to Texas, Wisconsin, or Michigan. They're in Michigan. a company doing incredible work in Whitehall that many of you may have never heard of, called Arconic. Let me put it this way. They're a large aerospace manufacturer. If you're flying a commercial aircraft in our country, you're likely benefiting for their products. They're doing world-class products that are innovating each and every day. And we should be proud of the great things we're doing, and we need to get a shout-out to all the companies creating great jobs like that. At the individual level, there's responsibility there, too, about getting that training. And I'm proud to say we lead the nation in having more industrial designers than any other state. I'm proud to say we lead the nation in having more mechanical and industrial engineers than any other state in the nation. And when you look at where the automotive industry is doing their research, 75% of the R&D for the U.S. auto industry is in Michigan. And let's not forget entrepreneurship. One of the cool statistics, and I could talk about so many startups, I don't have time, but to just give you a benchmark on venture capital. The venture capital industry in our country has actually declined by 14% over the last few years. In Michigan, what has it done? Over the last 15 years, it's up over 257%. So that capital is here making smart investments, doing wonderful things every corner from Detroit to up in the UP, and we should be proud of that. Now, there's more to do, though, in terms of giving better opportunities. It's all about the demand for talent and making sure we make that connection. Remember the question that all of us heard back in 2010, 2009. The question I heard from everyone was, where is there a job? That's not the question we're hearing today. The jobs are out there. The question is, how do I get the training? How do I get the opportunity to take that job? This is where we need to make that connection happen. To put it in perspective for you, if you go to mitalent.org, our website that aggregates job openings, when we had 11% unemployment back in 2011, we had 80,000 open jobs. We're below 5% today, and we have 90,000 open jobs, good, well-paying jobs. We must improve our career counseling. We've got to build on long-term talent pipeline on programs like First Robotics and Square One. We've got to do more to have career fairs, hands-on career fairs for our kids of all ages and their parents. We've got to get our companies to be more proactive to offer tours, provide mentors, to provide apprenticeships. This is a team effort, folks. Let's all rally together to make this happen. We also have a huge opportunity, given the situation, to reach out to people that didn't necessarily have the opportunity to be in our workforce. They face challenges. And to invite them to join us in this workforce and help eliminate the barriers that have kept them out. Two programs in particular. A program we started several years ago in 2012 is Community Ventures. It was there to help break down the barriers of the structurally unemployed. Did they need a ride to training? Did they need help with daycare? This was beyond all the federal programs, which are inadequate in my view. This was solely state dollars on how we can help these people. We're doing this in Flint, Pontiac, Saginaw, Detroit. Since it started, we've created over 3,700 good job opportunities, 1,000 in the last year alone. We're having more and more employers enter the program, and we're going to expand to more cities. This is a great opportunity to grow. The next area, though, is something I want to give a shout-out to our Lieutenant Governor and Justice Richard Bernstein. They created the My Hidden Talent Tour. We have 500,000 working-age Michiganders who have a disability and need an opportunity. They've gone to 12 cities across our state. We need to give them a shout out, and we need to reach out to help these people with disabilities have the opportunities they deserve. If you look at the results, they're tremendously productive, and we can do better. Let's give a shout out to the Justice and the Lieutenant Governor. And Justice Bernstein, it is well-deserved. I give you the shout-out, but I'll tell you something. In 7 years, that's the first time I ever got the Supreme Court to stand up. Placemaking. It's a critical priority. If you look at it, we need vibrant places to work, to play, to live. This is critical to our young people, our most important asset in the state of Michigan. Our best and the brightest are looking for the best opportunities and the best places to live. Here, not in the South, not in Silicon Valley. So we have to give them every reason to stay. We need to win that competition to create the best environments for them to want to live. If you look at those high-tech industries, those high opportunities, high-paying jobs, they're looking for those same places because they want to go where that talent's going to be. We're seeing that with the comeback of Detroit, with Grand Rapids, with a number of our other communities, but there's more to be done. That's why I'm looking forward to working with the legislature this year on smarter, more fiscally efficient, and effective policies to unlock private investment to revitalize our downtowns and our urban areas and our main streets throughout Michigan. We can do this in a smart way that will really be a catalyst for transformation in our urban areas to really increase the flow and the pace of young people staying in Michigan, coming to Michigan, and those employers flocking to Michigan. Let's work together on that. A wonderful program to complement, though, is a program I called Rising Tide. We started it over a year ago. How do we help our smaller communities in Michigan that may not have been included in that great economic comeback I was talking about participate? We took one community in each of the 10 regions of our state. It was about helping them help themselves. It wasn't about giving them a bunch of money. It was about bringing in resources on talent development, economic development, community development. These are proud, wonderful people in these communities that just needed a helping hand. It's working, folks. Over the last year, I've gone to all 10 of these communities. It's exciting to see the exciting things going on, the passion, the fire. They believe in their communities, and to see that growth happen. We're going to continue this program. In fact, my goal is to watch these first 10 communities graduate, and the thing I've asked of them is to go find another community in their region where they can go show them what they've done and how they can help one another. And I think it's a great opportunity of success. We have 10 communities. We actually have several of them with us tonight up in the gallery from Charlotte, Everett, Harrison, and River Rouge. If you'd please stand up, we'll give you a round of applause. One of the things to talk about, though, is we have the 21st Century Economy Commission, and I appreciate their work, and I'm looking forward to it. In addition to that, though, we do have some exciting opportunities. One of the most exciting things we have going on is the convergence of IT, automotive, becoming the mobility industry, the whole future of intelligent vehicles. And I want to thank Senator Kowal in particular for the autonomous vehicle legislation we had this last year. We're a national leader because of the work of this legislature. In addition to that, though, we have the whole Planet M mobility effort. Now, we're getting better at marketing in Michigan, folks. We're thinking big when we call it Planet M. This is about being the best in the world, and we are. We are winning the mobility race, but we need to keep it up. We have wonderful assets like M City, the new American Center for Mobility that will be 300-plus acres at Willow Run. We have smart highways. We're doing on-the-road testing. We're going to look at the regulatory, insurance, medical issues, all these things. This is an area we cannot afford to slow down in. We are the world's leader today. We need to continue to be the world's leader. We need to be the catalyst for the world to invite all parts of the world to join us in doing this in a safe, smart way. This isn't just about vehicles. Next topic is, if you've heard all these things, it's simple. We need to grow Michigan. We need to grow our population. I talked about how we've been growing, but if you look at it over the last 6 years, we've added about 50,000 people over 6 years. I want to set a real goal. We can grow faster than that. We can do better, particularly with some of these great programs we've talked about tonight. Our goal should be to reach 10 million people again. We were there once. We're at 9,928,000. We need 71,000 more people, and let's get them over the next 3 years. Let's put them to work in Michigan. I'm proud to be promoting Michigan. This is the greatest place to live, work, and play. This is a place we want to have for our children, and it's great to have my family here. I want to see them have a wonderful future along with all their friends, neighbors, and all the wonderful Michigan kids out there. A few years ago, I took some flack for telling college students they had a choice. You could be another yuppie in Chicago, or you could make a difference in Detroit. I still believe that statement. We want those innovative, entrepreneurial young people here, people that want to make a difference in the world, right here in Detroit, right here in Michigan. Think about what a difference a few years have made. I talked about the numbers, the net inward migration going on in Michigan. We're not just retaining, we're gaining. We're winning. And why not? We have awesome communities, amazing quality of life. We have a sense of purpose. We're showing how we can work together. This is not just a place to achieve, but to believe in. People of all ages can see opportunity here, the ability to make a difference, and attracting companies here too. Think about this. How many would have imagined Google and Uber setting up shop in Detroit, Rubbermaid setting up a research and development shop in Kalamazoo, Amazon setting up a shop in Livonia? They're not coming here to be nice to us. They're coming because they see talent here. They see opportunity in Michigan. And we made sure those opportunities are there for them and for the great people working in those organizations. This is the kind of start we need, and we need to build on it. We need to accelerate. I want to share one story with you. I was at the auto show last week, and we did a press conference announcing the first world champions. All the first robotics are bringing their world championships to Detroit for 2018 through 2020. Many of you may not be familiar with it, but it's a huge activity. It is heaven for nerds. I am very excited by this coming. But it's awesome. It's a huge event. It will use both Cobo Center and Ford Field. It's that large, bringing people and companies from around the world to compete. And we did a press conference. But during the press conference, a hand went up, not from a press person, but from a dad. What did the dad say? He said, "I want you to understand what this program can do and what's going on in our state." He said, "My son was a junior in high school. Had no idea where he was going to go to school, no idea about what he was going to study. His dad took him to a first event. He signed up for a first robotics team, fell in love with it. He's now majoring in mechanical engineering at Michigan Tech. He just took a job in a co-op program with OEM from the auto industry here in Michigan. He's reinventing Michigan. That young man is our future, and we should be proud of that." Our proven track record shows how far we've come. These are great accomplishments, but we can't take them for granted. We still face serious challenges in our state, challenges we didn't plan on, but we will overcome those too, with relentless positive action and partnership. We have a vision and the persistence and a commitment to our people that proves just how far we have to go still. But that's why we're going to succeed, by working together as one Michigan. Let's go get this done. God bless Michigan and the United States of America. Thank you.
You're listening to special coverage of Governor Snyder's State of the State Address on the Michigan Public Radio Network.
And this is Michigan Radio, your NPR news station.
Good evening, I'm Rick Pluta, Lansing Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network.
And I'm Zoe Clark with Michigan Radio. You can hear the House floor as the festivities of the speech are wrapping up, as Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly says good evening. Rick, still to come, we're going to hear the Democratic response to the governor's address, but an almost hour-long speech devoted to many, many topics ranging from agriculture to Medicaid expansion, infrastructure, the city of Flint, a somewhat laundry list of what Snyder considers to be, you know, his government's achievements over the past year.
Yeah, in many respects, the speech seemed very scattered in its focus. Mm. And I think maybe the governor took the opportunity to talk about some things that didn't get the attention that he thought they deserved last year when the speech was so focused on Flint.
And like what?
All of the worker retraining initiatives that are in there. The Michigan CARP Challenge, the $1 million that's been set aside as an incentive for people to come up with innovative ways to fight invasive species in the Great Lakes. I think the marquee moment of this speech was probably when he set a goal of making Michigan once again a state of 10 million people, that, you know, doing things to attract young people back here, you know, getting careers, filling jobs, empty positions that are available right now, telling, you know, people that they should go, instead of being a yuppie in Chicago, go be a trailblazer in Detroit.
Something the governor has been saying for years, years. We want to continue the analysis of this speech, but first we're going to get obviously a different kind of response to what we just heard. We're welcoming Democratic Leader of the House, Sam Singh. Welcome to the Michigan Public Radio Network's live broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Well, just let's start broad. What were your impressions of the speech?
Well, you know, there were a number of issues in the speech that I thought could find bipartisan support as we go through this upcoming year. The big issue was there wasn't a lot of detail. And so if you don't know what the detail is behind any of these proposals, we don't know whether we can come to the table or not. There were things I was hoping I was going to hear from the governor, things about the education report that's sitting on his desk that shows that we're underfunding education, $1,200 per pupil. I was hoping to hear some more details about what Michiganders who don't feel the economy is working for them, what the state government could do to make them feel more stable in this economy. And those were things that I thought were unfortunately missed in the speech.
Do you feel like it was lacking then in a lot of details? As we noted, a laundry list of achievements. What would you have liked to have heard?
Well, I would have liked to have heard more very specific details. It's one thing to talk about infrastructure. We know we need to do it. The question is, how are we going to do that? One of the things that we've always said is we want to make sure that it's fair. A lot of burden has been moved on to individuals for working families. That's why they feel this anxiety. We heard it through the election process. We've heard it over the last few years. And so, to me, I have to know those details. How are we going to make these things work? You know, I appreciate talking about good government, but when you don't talk about how we expand the Freedom of Information Act, how we don't deal with a number of the campaign finance issues that we're grappling with as a state, when we don't deal with those issues, I think it makes things very uncertain for people. And I know when I talk to Michiganders, they want to see those types of things changed here in the state of Michigan.
You know, one of the things that seemed to be absent from this speech was, you know, any real mention of tax policy here in the House. The Republican speaker has said that rolling back the income tax is going to be priority one. What's your takeaway that the governor didn't feel the need to mention that one way or the other?
Well, when you take a look at how much we have to invest, whether it's in our K-12 schools, our higher education, our infrastructure, you can't be doing a big tax cut at the same point in time. So if you're really serious about trying to position Michigan in a global economy, you have to make those level of investments. You know, one of the things that we've seen in local communities that we've actually balanced the state budget on the backs of local communities, $7.5 billion over the last decade and a half. And so to me, if we're going to try to solve some of these legacy costs that the governor wants to talk about in these local communities, we need to deal with some of the revenue question, and you can't be doing a huge tax cut that doesn't really support that investment.
If the state can't afford a big tax cut, can the state afford a boost in the earned income tax credit, which you have set as a priority
Sure.
for Democrats?
Well, absolutely. It's obviously a much different conversation when eliminating the entire income tax versus doing something that's very targeted, such as the earned income tax credit. That tax actually invests into communities because people get that money. These are usually lower income workers. They're working for a living. They're doing two jobs. And they take that money and they put that right back into the economy. So it's actually cyclical. When you do these big tax cuts to the top 1%, they're not always investing it back into the state. But when you have low-income workers that are working for a living and you give them a little bit more, they're going to invest that back in local businesses.
You said that maybe there were some areas where you could see working hand in glove with the administration. Where were those areas that you heard in the speech tonight?
Well, again, we think very strongly that if we are going to solve some of the state's infrastructure problems, we have to do that together. We have to take a look at our water systems. We have to take a look at our sewer systems. The issues that popped up in Flint over the last few years really tells us that we have to make that level of investment. And so I think if there's the right plan that comes forward by the governor, I could see Democratic support for that infrastructure, because I'd like to have people back to work working on these things so we can actually see some changes. If it's just going to be a retread of the roads conversation, where unfortunately revenue went up, taxes went up on our average Michigan citizens, but at the same time we didn't necessarily see better quality roads, we're not going to be part of that. But if there's a comprehensive conversation that's fair, we'll be there.
What would the elements of an infrastructure package have to look like to get your support?
Well, I think it has to really build off of local communities. One of the things that, you know, we've seen because of this lack of investment to local communities, balancing the state budget on these local communities, we need to have them as partners, because they are looking at their sewer systems, their water systems. We have to engage in that. So part of that could be bonding. Part of that could be looking to the federal government for different sets of resources. But to me, we have to make sure that we're working in partnership with local governments.
Great. House Democratic Leader Sam Singh, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we now turn to the Republican State Attorney General, Bill Schuette. Welcome.
Good being with you. Good evening.
So what number State of the State address is this for you? Would you be able to count it?
You know, I was counting. I was talking to Nick Curry, our outstanding State Treasurer, about that. And I think it's probably, as a congressman, state senator, court of appeals judge, an attorney general, it's probably maybe 20. So I've seen a lot of governors come and go. You know, Engler, Granholm, Rick Snyder. So it's been kind of fun.
So put this speech then into context. When you look at all of those, what did you hear tonight that you can agree with? What were you shaking your head at?
You know, I give the governor high marks for enthusiasm and positivity, and talking about the many accomplishments that we've basically drained Michigan swamp from the past. We've have more people working, more jobs, and more paychecks. So very positive and enthusiastic about that. And I think the highlight for me was this race towards mobility. And really what this auto show is all about, and Michigan's future was all about, is this convergence between the tech company and the transportation sector, and frankly the competition between California and Michigan. And we need to make sure that the Michigan of the future flourishes in terms of this computers on wheels, and that's what cars will be in my opinion. And there's this competition of Google and Amazon. You're going to do it in California, you're going to do it in Michigan. I want to have it in Michigan, and that means our regulatory framework needs to be free-flowing. California ties you in knots because of their regulatory, whether it's emissions, this, that, or the other. Michigan needs to be a place of open skies, open ideas, where we can build jobs and paychecks. That'll grow our state. And I think that's really the one of the key takeaways I got, was this race towards mobility.
I'd like to turn the discussion to Flint, that you've got both criminal and civil investigations.
There's a quick change
for you.
That
was quite the pivot.
Yeah, that was a big pivot, but that's okay. I'm with you. I'm with you, Rick.
There are criminal and civil investigations underway. Last year, about half the speech was devoted to Flint. Do you think enough attention was paid to Flint in this year's State of the State address?
You know, any governor has a big responsibility. She or he has to talk about a wide variety of issues. You know, my focus is the criminal investigation on Flint. And we've had 43 charges, most recently felony charges against the emergency managers in the city of Flint. My job is all about delivering justice for families of Flint. And some people say, Bill, why are you doing this? Let me tell you, there are families in Flint who've only used bottled water for over 2 years for other fruits, vegetables, and drinking. Some young mothers don't want to bathe their newborn infants in that water. And when 12 people have died because of Legionnaire's disease, I know just what my job is. Now, there are voices out there, Rick, who just soon this go away, we'd forget about it, sweep it under the rug and turn the page, hope that everybody in the news business and social media would find the next current rage story to talk about. Then there are voices out there that want to use the people of Flint as some political chessboard. How can you gain advantage and who can win, who can lose? Both those are just callous and caustic, and I'm going to provide justice for the families of Flint. That's my job. That's what I'll do.
And did the governor then, do you think, get that tone right? I mean, last year he spent some 38 minutes, more than half of his speech on Flint. Today it took almost half an hour to get into the city, and then it was only a few minutes before he then pivoted, I will steal Rick Pluta's word, and went on to talk about infrastructure statewide.
Well, you know, I think the need for infrastructure is evident, and everybody knows the story of Flint. Let's face it. I mean, it's out there. Everyone has concerns. Everyone has responsibilities. I certainly know my role and my responsibilities as Attorney General. It's going to be full and complete, and that's what I'm going to do.
Are we going to see more indictments?
Well, you know what? As I've said from day one, we never talk about the internal strategy of the investigation.
No, but you have talked before about whether or not we can expect more criminal charges.
And what I've said is we're closer to the end than we are to the beginning. Flint quite properly receives a tremendous amount of my time. It'll continue to do that, and my team, and it's going to be done right. It's going to be done correctly. That is just what will occur.
So more charges or not?
You know, what we do is we have investigations, we have interviews, and when 2 + 2 = 4, when we find probable cause of a crime, then we charge it. If we don't, we don't manufacture anything. It'll be just as the investigation, where the truth takes us, it's all about accountability, because the point here in Michigan, there's one system of justice. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you're important, unimportant, big shot, no shot at all, we're going to get it done right, Rick.
Attorney General Bill Schuette, thank you for your time this evening.
It's great being with you. Thanks very much.
Let's now turn to Senate Democratic Leader Jim Ananick. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. He's saying hello
to the Attorney General. we're talking about Flint, obviously. Where do you live? This is your district. Did the governor do enough speaking about Flint tonight? In your mind?
Speaking and action are two different things, anyway. So I think the most important thing is, you know, it's still referred to as the Flint water crisis, and I think the citizens of Flint and the taxpayers of the state have a right to demand an answer about when this is coming to an end, and it seems to be nowhere near in sight. So, you know, as you mentioned, there's only 600 out of tens of thousands of lines removed in Flint. There are obviously still many folks fighting for bottled water and clean water at their homes in the lawsuit, and the state continues to lose that lawsuit and continue to fight it as opposed to providing services that I think most people think they deserve. So I think it deserves more attention and definitely deserves more action.
Should it have deserved more time in the speech?
The amount of time, if he was guaranteeing more action, I care less if he brings it up at all. I want to see action, and I think the people of the state deserve it. So I think, probably it should have, but I definitely am going to be demanding more action on it.
You know, one of the measures of success in Flint will be, people wanting to move there, you know, deciding that that's a place to build a life. What do you think of the governor's goal of getting Michigan back to being a state where 10 million people live?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fine goal. I mean, I think people moving to our state is important. People moving to my community is very important. I think we've had a lot of great people at the local level really coming together and trying to do what we can to work on the things that we know are positives in Flint.
But is it doable?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I obviously want to see us grow, and I also want to see us have a lot of jobs. I mean, it was a lot of fluff in this speech. Let's be real. I mean, this was not a speech high in detail. He spent the first 20 minutes patting himself on the back, and the next 20 minutes talking about the problems that we have going on, the crumbling infrastructure, whether it's in Flint or in a sinkhole in Fraser. And to compare the two, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little, from someone who lives in Flint,
yeah.
you can reroute a road. You can't reroute 100,000 people. And that was really sort of, I know what he was trying to do, but it was offensive in the sense that this is a 3-year crisis. Mm-hmm. This is a problem that we need to fix in Fraser. But comparing the two is a little bit, a little too bean counter for me.
Senator, I would love your thoughts as a Democrat, a Republican governor, talking about healthy Michigan, something that started in Michigan because was the Medicaid expansion, a part of the Affordable Care Act, something Republicans do not want. What do you take as a Democrat listening to a Republican governor say, I'm going to work with the federal government to explain how good this is, something you could cheer for?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of things that he really sort of took a lot of things that President Obama did and sort of co-opted them into his message. Obviously, the auto bailout from 2008, 2009 is what caused us to have such robust job growth. The Healthy Michigan was a bipartisan package. It wouldn't have passed without Democrats. And that portion of Obamacare is wildly successful in Michigan. A lot of the things he's talked about are things that Democrats have worked on. I think most of the positive things we've seen in the state. The roads plan, which is a huge tax increase with no guarantee of any roads being fixed, was something we didn't work on. I was proud not to work on that. I think it's going to be an absolute failure. I think anytime he wants Trump at the things President Obama did, I'd be more than happy to stand up and cheer.
Just quickly, what is one thing you heard in that speech that you think there's a realistic possibility of working with Governor Snyder and the Republicans on?
Oh, I think the asset management piece is something that we can work on. I think a lot of the things when it comes to placemaking are things that Democrats have fought for and worked on for a long time. I can clap for high school students anytime he wants me to. I mean, he did a lot of that. I'm not sure if that actually moves Michigan forward, but it's a cute story, and I was more than happy to stand up and support that. So, and when he wants to get into details and try to get these things done, I'll be more than happy to sit down and try to bring caucus votes if we're serious about solving the problems. But I can tell you one thing that he didn't mention, I think, is it's really unconscionable to me. The state government literally stole millions of dollars from people, charged 400% interest on unemployment, the unemployment insurance benefit they've earned, and to steal
these were people who were charged with unemployment insurance fraud,
yes,
and it turned out that there was a glitch in the system.
Of them were, yes, and we heard nothing about how you rectify tens of thousands of people who had their money stolen from the state government. And that's all. That's what happened. And I think I plan to work with my colleagues in both the House and the Senate, conservatives and Democrats along, to fix this problem if the governor's not going to do it.
Okay, and just very quickly, what would the elements of an infrastructure package have to look like in order to get your support?
Well, I mean, he laid out very few details, so I think that's going to be a long conversation. It's going to have to be a real plan. What we saw last year was sort of a tax increase with no plan to fix roads, and that's definitely not going to be something we'd support.
Senate Democratic Leader Jim Ananick, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you much.
Thanks for joining us. And now a Republican, State Representative Gary Glenn of Midland. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So, first of all, just overall, what were your impressions of the speech?
The most optimistic, success-oriented, forward-looking state of the state that I've heard, and I think it's the third one that I've heard, but especially in contrast to what we Republicans like to refer to as the lost decade. That first 10 years of this century where Michigan lost 800,000 jobs, more than any other state in the nation, losing population, and now have turned it around to where we're one of the nation's leaders over the last several years in new job creation, in income growth, and we're just getting started, especially on industries like the mobility industry, where we are a leader in the international economy on bringing that kind of technology to Michigan. So a very optimistic and uplifting, frankly, speech that I think provided us a lot of things we can work on to add more fuel to the fire of what Michigan's already done in terms of our economic comeback.
You know, it's difficult to shoehorn a lot of detail into a State of the State speech, even one that's an hour long. But even by the standards of the State speech, it seemed to me at least that this was a little spare on details. Were you satisfied with the level of information that you got in this address?
I was not only satisfied but excited about the report card. Because the point of this address each year is not only to lay out the governor's legislative strategy for the coming year, but also to provide a state of the state. And that was a very exciting report that he was able to give to us.
You're talking about that first half hour of the speech,
yeah,
where he went and talked about the unemployment rate. And
number one in the Midwest in attracting population back to a state. Number one in job creation. Number one in wage growth. Number one in migration of people with bachelor's degrees, being on the cutting edge of the mobility technology. I mean, this is a success story that is in stark contrast to what we heard coming out of the Granholm administration. I'm not one to give all the credit to one individual, but you do have to look at the stark difference between the years 2000 to 2010 and what the governor, what has happened under Governor Snyder's administration. And certainly he deserves some of the credit. And I think the fact that you've had Republican control of both houses of the legislature that have implemented economy-boosting measures like right-to-work legislation. And now we're talking about fueling future economic growth and job creation with an income tax rollback, all of which
the governor pointedly did not mention in his speech.
And that's why there are three branches of government, because the legislature gets to implement and initiate as well. And we think that there is room, including with agreement from the governor, to have some kind of income tax relief for the people of Michigan. I heard you earlier talking to Senator Ananick about the Healthy Michigan program. But I want to remind people that just a few months ago, it was former President Bill Clinton who called Obamacare a crazy idea that economically burdened the middle class in America. That coming from the former president and the husband of the Democratic candidate for president. So I know that those on my side of the aisle are strongly supportive of incoming President Trump's pledge to repeal Obamacare and replace it with something that will lift the tax burden off of employers and the middle class in this country and hopefully be further stimulus to more job creation in Michigan and across the country.
So the governor said, he used the word billions, that we will need to invest billions in infrastructure, you know, over in the coming years.
He said decades.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you're talking about an income tax rollback. What do you think a package to fund infrastructure improvements and development ought to include?
Well, I think he was very careful to say that we need to invest billions over the next several decades. So that, of course, means millions, hundreds of millions on an annual basis. And I look to the models of President John F. Kennedy and President Ronald Reagan and President George W. Bush, whose income tax cuts stimulated economic growth and job creation and led to an increase in federal revenue. So if we follow the same model of the Kennedy-Reagan-Bush example, we'll actually generate more jobs, more income, more people working, paying more taxes. And if the prior examples are any indication, we would likely then see an increase in government revenue resulting from more jobs and more taxes being paid, which is a good thing. I think we ought to spend whatever money we spend wisely, but if we have an increase in state revenue because our economy is booming, I think everybody would agree that's a good thing.
So, Republican State Representative Gary Glenn, thank you for your time.
You
sorry
bet.
To interrupt there. We're trying to get as many guests and talk to as many voices, including Flint Mayor Karen Weaver, who joins us now, who is here at the governor's State of the State speech and on the House floor. Mayor, he gave you a shout out. He looked directly around the chamber, looked for you, called you out and said, you know, let's everyone give you a moment of applause.
Yes. Yeah, he did. He did. And we've been working very diligently trying to move some things forward for the city of Flint. And so one of the things I have to say is while he did his state of the state, he spoke in generalities, but one thing he did say, and you know we're going to hold him to this, was that we're not done in Flint and there's still a lot of work to do.
But he didn't roll out any new proposals dealing with the city and what's going on other than the general nod to infrastructure. What do you make of that?
I said, well, maybe I'll have to fill in the blanks and roll them out myself. That's what I make of it. And that's what I was looking to hear. And I didn't hear those things. I didn't hear specifics as far as when you talk about rolling something out. But we've got some plans in Flint.
Well, what would you have liked to have heard?
Well, you know, one of the things that I did hear were things that had already happened. And everything that he talked about were things that had happened. And we were very grateful that those things have happened. But we need some more. You know, we've got a lot of work to do. We need money for infrastructure. We need to continue with this lead service line replacement. And we need the funds to do that. And so we're looking for that to happen. That's one of the things we're looking for. We're still looking for more services and supports for the kids and families that have been, you know, impacted by this lead contamination.
Mayor, throughout 2016, you saw Democratic visits, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders. You saw President Barack Obama. I believe you were even in the motorcade and in his limo at one point with the governor, wasn't it?
With the governor. It was the three of us. We were ordered in the car.
To be a fly on the wall in that car. What was that ride like?
You know what? It was really, really interesting. One of the things that the president talked about was what happened in Flint. And while, we're all Americans, and we need to stop pointing fingers about where and who is to blame, and we need to come together and make some things happen for Flint, and that he had our back. But he did give the governor some orders as far as I'm looking for some money from the state.
And so then quickly in the last minute that we have you know, Friday we have a new president who will be inaugurated. What are you looking to for Donald Trump and what he will do for the city?
Well, you know, one of the things he talked about was infrastructure was a priority for him. We're the poster child for that. And so I really would like the opportunity to have conversation with him to talk about what we need in Flint, because the work is not done. There's still a lot more to do. And, you know, one of the things he talked about was, you said how I've been, you know, there was Hillary, there was Bernie, there was Obama. As far as putting things behind us and let's move forward and work together and make some things happen. And that's what I'm ready to do, because like you said, the work isn't done, and we've got to continue to move forward for Flint.
Have you heard from anyone in the incoming Trump administration?
You know, they were supposed to be coming to Flint. That was probably about 3 weeks ago, and I'm not sure what happened. That trip was postponed, canceled. I know they didn't come. So I'm waiting.
But possibly looking for a visit in the new year.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Mayor Karen Weaver of Flint, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's turn now in the final few moments that we have to Jake Neer. He is a producer and reporter at public radio station in Detroit, WDET. And Jake, for years before that, too, you covered Lansing with Rick Pluta, reporter for the Michigan Public Radio Network. So you have covered a speech or two. Help put all of this into context. The hour-long speech, we heard some of the responses. What was of note to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I started covering the Capitol in 2012, these speeches were policy documents. They were setting out goals for what he wanted the legislature to accomplish and what he wanted the state to accomplish in the coming year. This was not that speech, I don't think. I mean, this is about crafting a legacy, crafting a narrative. It was pretty thin on policy proposals, I would say, especially compared to past speeches. But I also think it was maybe one of the more enthusiastic speeches I've heard from the governor in terms of his tone and his delivery. It didn't sound like he was, reciting things from notes. I mean, it sounded like he was really, you know, that he was speaking in some ways out of pure enthusiasm. I mean,
he doesn't work from a text.
Right.
You know, he works from notes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So. But I mean, it sounded to me like he was, like he was genuinely enthusiastic. So in some ways, driving home that message of a Michigan on the rebound, that he has, he and the legislature, the Republican legislature, have moved the state in the right direction. Of course, as we've heard from Democrats, that when you look at the actual results, I guess it's debatable.
And in the end, setting that optimistic goal of making Michigan a 10 million people state again.
Right. Also, we heard about Michigan cows, too. That was a highlight. And also,
in 30 years of covering the Capitol, I think that's the first cattle shout out I've ever heard.
I think so. And probably the first time I've heard about crowdsourcing solutions for things like Asian carp and so forth. This is a very 21st century speech, if you will.
Well, we will have to leave it there. A 21st century speech, Governor Rick Snyder's penultimate speech, his seventh speech, Governor Rick Snyder's State of the State address. The program was engineered by Bob Scon. We had help from Joe Lindstroth, Jake Neer, and Shana Roth.
I'm Rick Pluta of the Michigan Public Radio Network.
And I'm Zoe Clark of Michigan Radio. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're listening to Michigan Radio, your state, your stories, your NPR news station.
President-elect Donald Trump had a lot to say about China during the presidential campaign, not much of it positive. With the appointment of Iowa Governor Terry Branstad as ambassador to China, that might change.
I had told Donald Trump on several occasions, don't say anything bad about China when you're in Iowa. We have a great relationship there.
A move for friendlier U.S.-China relations on the next Morning Edition.
Don't miss Morning Edition weekdays between 5 and 9 here on Michigan Radio. And you can listen to Michigan Radio just about anywhere and anytime. If you can get online, you can listen. Just go to MichiganRadio.org and click on the play button to hear all the great news, interviews, and shows that keep you informed and entertained. Michigan Radio weather for tonight, cloudy with a chance of rain and some areas of fog, lows in the low to mid-30s. Tomorrow, cloudy with highs in the low 40s. And on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 44. Friday, a mix of clouds and sun with a chance of rain, highs in the low to mid-40s. This is Michigan Radio, and you're listening to Fresh Air in Progress.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Laurel Thatcher Ulrich, author of the new book, A House Full of Females, about polygamy and women's rights in early Mormonism. The book covers the year